thanks so much for coming this morning. I know there's a lot of exciting concurrent sessions now. So I'm going to talk to you about stability and change in autism symptoms from childhood to young adulthood. I think we hear a lot at MFAR about heterogeneity in autism, but we actually don't talk a lot about the intra-individual variability across the lifespan, which Sophie has done a nice job highlighting, particularly in the early toddler years. And I like this quote by Sally Rogers and Bruce Pennington from a few years ago, I guess more than a few years ago, but because I think it reminds us, of course, that we know that autism is a developmental disorder, but that really what we're seeing on the surface when we're doing behavioral assessments to diagnose is our symptoms, our manifestations of some underlying deficit, presumably neurological, driven by other aspects of biological differences. But so because this is a developmental disorder, we expect to see continued development across the lifespan in some things, but I think we haven't paid enough attention to really understanding that across the lifespan. So we know in children that core autism features vary by age and developmental level, but we know less about how autism manifests in adults. And so how do we interpret, for example, decreases in autism symptom measures from childhood to adulthood? I think there's a lot of desire to talk about improvement or decreased severity, and I worry a little that that may be a little bit misleading, simply because it's not that these individuals are necessarily losing a diagnosis of autism. Outside of the measures, you know, we use the measures as tools to gather information, but we still think that these adults often have autism, even though the scores on an instrument may go down or indicate or seem to indicate fewer symptoms. And so I think thinking about, you know, how does continued development play into this? So there have been a few studies looking at scores from the autism diagnostic interview, so a parent interview aimed at gathering information about autism symptoms over time. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on this particular slide, other than I want to show that across different studies of different age ranges, there does seem to be some change, and particularly potentially some decreases that people may want to interpret as improvement and lessening of symptoms. But again, many of these studies have suggested these individuals continue to have autism diagnoses. On the ADI, we know that cross-sectionally, so this is not longitudinal data, this is cross-sectional data, that scores vary by language. So the children in the green have are minimally verbal or have less language. Children in blue are verbally fluent, have complex sentence speech, and the children in yellow have the simple phrases. And basically this is just showing that individuals with less language tend to have higher scores on the ADI. And so what does that mean when we're thinking about longitudinal change on the ADI in particular? So one thing I didn't highlight about the studies on two slides ago in the longitudinal data is that those studies have mixed age and ability levels, which make it difficult to interpret decline. So for example, Marsha Mielek's longitudinal study at the first time point, their individuals range from age 10 to age 52, and so they're on average, I think in their early 20s, at the first time point, and followed 4 years later. And so when you're looking at a decline over that 4.5 year period, it's hard to know what to make of that, right? So because those individuals are spanning a lot of different developmental periods. And so in our cross-sectional data might suggest that changes in symptoms certainly could vary depending on language development in individuals as they're getting older. And I think another question that is open for investigation is, you know, if there is stability, particularly in domain scores that encompass many different symptoms, does that really mean that there's no change, or is it maybe masking changes in individual symptoms? And so the current study, we're really focusing on examining change in individual symptoms by language level. And so many of you will be familiar with this study. This is the EDX project led by Kathy Lord. And so these are 132 children, so a subset of her sample referred for autism at 2 years. And the majority of these children were language delayed at age 2, and they were followed at 3, 5, 9, and 18. And so I want to spend a little bit of time on this slide because these groups will become important throughout the presentation. So what we did is actually because the majority of children were language delayed at 2, we focused on language at age 3 and at age 18. So at age 3, we defined the blue group as children who were quote, verbal, or using at least phrase speech. For those of you familiar with the ADI, that's question 30, and they would have a score of a 0. And then also maintained that level of language at age 18. So the verbal, or VV throughout the presentation also will continue to be blue. Those are children who are verbal, using phrase speech starting at 3. So the red group are children who were delayed or continued to show delays at age 3. And those would have been children who were using no or few single words. So score ADI, question 30, scores of 1 or 2 at age 3, but by age 18 would have been classified as verbal on the ADI. And then the green group is children who were delayed at age 3 and continued to be minimally verbal at age 18. And so this is just to give you kind of an overview of the sample. 127 of the children were diagnosed at 2, and 5 received their ASD diagnoses a bit later. Only 7 individuals did not meet autism criteria at age 18. And just if you look at sort of the bottom here, you can see the sort of breakdown in terms of children who were using 5 or more words or fewer than 5 words. This is age 3 here, and then by age 18, both the blue and the red groups are all falling in the verbal range, whereas the green group is sort of 60-40 in no words versus few words. So I want to highlight that this study is different from what Sophie's presented for a number of reasons. Obviously, this is also it's a very different age range. But in particular, rather than using a statistical method that identifies different trajectories or groups of children who follow different trajectories, we've input language levels, these language changes, to really be able to look at how symptoms change with the development of language. Excuse me. And so we use generalized linear mixed models, and we'll look at mean effects of time, language group, as well as the interaction between that time and language. And so we have the ADI, we're focusing on current behavior assessed at each of these different time points, and really focusing on social communication behaviors and the various items in these subdomains. So this is the overall total, and you'll see a lot of slides that look very similar to this. So again, I'm going to spend just a little bit of time to orient you. This is the overall social communication total. So 14 items ranging, the score ranges could be from 0 to 28. And so across the x-axis, we have approximate age. Across the y-axis, you have the score ranges, and then each of the 3 language groups. And so here we see significant effects of time, language group, as well as an interaction. So you can see that the blue group here, so again, remember everyone is language delayed at 2. By 3, the blue group has made the most gains in language, and we're also seeing the sharpest decline in scores, or in other words, potentially a development of those skills, and then they continue to improve. The pink group, so those children who are still delayed at 3, sorry, I should say these are in reference to the blue group, so they're still significantly higher than the blue group, but also by the time they are 18, they're looking much more like their verbal counterparts. And the the adults who remain minimally verbal really have much more stable scores across time. So if we want to break this down into subdomains, so this one's a little hard to see because it's nonverbal behaviors, only has 2 items, but I can tell you that the there's not a mean effect of time, so they're relatively stable across all 3 groups, but there is some language differences that are getting picked up in here, but primarily driven by that minimally verbal group, which is a little bit higher. And then all the other three domains showed significant effects of time, language, and interactions. And for the most part, these look very similar to the very first graph that I showed you with the overall total. And you can see much more stability in those individuals who remain minimally verbal, a tendency for a quicker development or improvement in the children who fell in the verbal group at age three, and the delayed group who end up being more verbal by 18, sort of in the middle, kind of catching up a little bit later. So the next several slides, I'm going to try to go through a little bit quickly, and I think the goal isn't for you to walk away with, from this knowing exactly which items do what. It's more to just notice that there's a lot of variability in the different behaviors. So these are individual items on the ADI. So first we'll look at nonverbal behaviors. So this is the range of facial expressions. And we see there's not a, again, not a significant main effect of time, so much more stability. But there are language group differences, again, mostly driven by that minimally verbal group tending to have a little bit higher or more abnormalities in this area. Social smiling, I think, is my favorite, just because I think it shows an interesting, sort of thought-provoking, pattern. So here we don't see main effects of time. So relative stability, but of course you notice this blue group here, right? So they look like they're improving up till about five. And so those of you who do longitudinal research will know that, you know, a change from one time point to another doesn't necessarily, tell you what's going to happen. So I'm going to just ask you to focus a little bit on that 9 to 18 where we continue to see that upward trend. And so what that starts to suggest to me is that, you know, they are actually sort of going back to kind of maybe where they were or possibly a worsening. And I want you to sort of think about what do we know about adolescence? So this item is about smiling at people as they approach. Maybe that's something that we shouldn't necessarily expect to maintain gains. And that might be completely developmentally appropriate. So these two items, sharing and showing and directing attention, I think show pretty similar trajectories to what we have already talked about in the overall scores. So more stability in the minimally verbal group and greater improvements in those groups that are more verbal. Whereas seeking to share enjoyment, we actually don't see an interaction between time and language. And so even though this minimally verbal group continues to be higher, they're also showing improvement. So really there's improvement across all language groups. With respect to inappropriate facial expressions, again, we're seeing, primarily stability here. Whereas others, using others' body to communicate or offering comfort, both have significant interactions. I think with using others' body to communicate, it's interesting you see a little bit of a spike between two and three, or maybe it's even more stability, but then all of the groups are really showing improvements or a decline in that area or in that behavior. Whereas the offering comfort, again, shows the kind of more familiar graph by now with the stability for those individuals who have less language. Quality of social overtures, appropriateness of social responses, again, are primarily main effects of time and language. So quality of social overtures in particular, you're seeing improvements across all the three groups, though the degree to which those skills are developing does vary a little bit by language. And then the last set of items, so head shaking. Just do they shake their head? To me, no. We're actually only seeing sort of marginal effects of language and a marginal interaction, and you can see that sort of driven by something going on here at 9 and 18. So maybe a much smaller and more delayed development of that skill. And of course, the pointing, nodding, and conventional instrumental gestures are showing the more sort of similar changes where we're actually seeing improvements across all the language groups, but again, at sort of different rates. So the next two slides, these are all the same items that you've already seen, and so don't worry too much if you can't pick out exactly which line we're following here, but it was more to just point out that, you know, within groups of individuals who have similar language trajectories, you know, we're seeing general patterns, so, you know, the verbal-verbal group making the greatest gains, tending to show improvements or development earlier in the study. And those individuals who are remaining minimally verbal showing maybe more stability fewer gains. But I think, you know, what this also highlights, as you can see, I tried to make them red so you could see that it's not every item and that there's some variability across each of these groups. And sort of the same thing here. So some improvement, but not all of the items are showing the exact same kinds of changes. So to summarize, I think it's really important to think of what we as clinicians, as researchers, define as core autism symptoms, and remember that these individuals' symptoms or behaviors show different trajectories across childhood and adolescence. So some individual behaviors seem to improve as language develops, so things like showing and offering comfort, whereas others seem to improve regardless of the level of language, but just as individuals are getting older. So things like quality of social overtures, pointing and nodding. Other symptoms or behaviors seem to be relatively stable, and this was, in the items looking at facial expressions, which I think mirrors what Sophie just talked about in the very young children. And then some changes may actually reflect developmental context and thinking about social smiling in adolescence. Again, I want to really highlight all of these children, except for 7, continue to meet autism criteria at age 18. So these decreases in symptoms or these improvements in the behaviors are not to suggest that they don't continue to have autism. And so I think thinking of that, the symptoms that we are using to diagnose children may not be the best markers for autism in adults. I want to remind people, though, that the ADI algorithm that's used for diagnosis is still based on past behavior. So I'm not saying that we have to necessarily change that. This isn't about the instrument's sensitivity, but that when we're seeing adults in our clinics, we just have to think very carefully about what patterns of behaviors we're looking for. So there's a few limitations. Certainly we're focusing on those items in this study that differentiate autism versus non-autism at about ages 4 to 5. And so we're not necessarily identifying or telling you these new symptoms that we may be missing, what are the behaviors that we that lead us to believe that these individuals still have autism. And of course, this is a sample of children who are all language delayed and identified as having autism before 3 in the early 90s. So just to conclude, I think, you know, to urge all of us, clinicians and researchers really, but to be cautious when we're assessing adults for first-time autism diagnoses. So I hear a lot of people, we have an adult comes into the clinic and says, and we say like, oh, he has good eye contact or he has lots of gestures. He couldn't have autism. And I think we have to be really careful about making those assumptions. And we need to also identify what symptoms characterize autism in adulthood. And that's really going to have to inform a development of new instruments for adult assessment. And keeping in mind that, you know, we're only really talking about young adulthood, we really need to think about middle and older adults to think about how symptoms may continue to be stable or continue to change. So just want to acknowledge particularly my collaborators and my mentor, Kathy Lord, all of the participants who have hung in this study for over 20 years now, and some funding agencies at my lab, which has been instrumental in getting presentations put together. So thank you.